I can start talking about food that I didn't think about. August meeting, August 1st. And roll call, we have, let's see, one, two. John O'Day is traveling, I know that, he's on vacation for 3 weeks. And Supervisor Wamble is also excused, he's traveling, they're both youth in governance. We have a quorum, so we're just in. Approval of the minutes from the previous meeting, if you all received those, if I could get a motion.
So moved.
To approve. Supervisor Brady?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Franco. Youth in governance?
Aye.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Ayes are approved. Chairman, committee members, supervisors.
I have just a couple things. One is this weekend and last week when I was doing a couple things in the parks. And I witnessed our parks department almost every morning, the guys. And the youth that we've got working there. And right now we've got the work crew. And I know it gets old hearing about this Emerald Ashport thing, but the work that the youth crew did when we first got them, which was I think 4 or 5 years ago, was about useless. They were just, you talk derelicts, we had derelicts. And that's what it was. It was us and the state, the city, the government, the federal, everybody trying to get these people on track. And they came out to our center out at the Katy Park, and they would throw rocks and they would fight with each other and they would do all these things. The organization that we have now, and Matt and Ray have done this, and the guys that we have, the foreman that we have doing it, we've gotten so much out of this youth work crew this year at Fox River Park, just filling in what we would have to have our mainline guys doing, all the trees that we grubbed out and all the borings that we did and taking out and getting the soil in there. But I watch those little things. But we've got so much with this committee now that it's called facilities, and we've got the highway and the parks and the golf. And from the top down, the organization here that I've seen this year, it's the last, not just this year. But I was very impressed this week thinking about it after my meeting with Ray on Thursday. And again, it comes from the top down, and that means the county executive is working very well with the leadership here, with Ray, with Gary, with Clement, with Matt, and Mike and Frank. And we've got the most activity of any committee that you'll have on the county board, going on with construction, the highways, the parks and things. And the coordination that I just want to actually, my comment this evening is to thank all of you. And like I said, it starts with the county executive, and they are already reporting and doing their budgets to the county executive as of this week. So if you do have, as a committee member, questions and thoughts, input that you want on the budget, it's not in October to do it. This is the time. Because this is when our staff is doing it. And this is when all the work gets done. The main comment is to thank all of you here that work for the county for everything that I've seen this year. It's very impressive. And starts with Ray and all of you guys that are in charge of each little thing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, now we move on to supervisors, youth and governments. Any comments? We'll move on to citizens' comments. Any citizen that would wish to address the committee would have 5 minutes to speak on any issue that would involve anything that we do here. And we just ask that you give your name and address. Any citizens' comments? If not, we'll move on. Lucky man tonight, golf.
All right. In golf operations, our next big initiative is the Kenosha County Executive Cup. This is an 18-hole event that we hold at Brightondale Links that raises funds for our junior program. It's a fun event, very affordable. It's lunch, dinner, and 18 holes with carts and prizes for $75. And that is September 13th. So if anybody wants to play, you're more than welcome to play in that event. The sign up is on our website, and hopefully we'll get 144 players and raise some good money for our junior golf programs. The Kenosha County Open went very well. We had 69 golfers in the event. It's a three-day event at Brightondale on Friday and Sunday and Petrifying Springs on Saturday. Andrew Trionic, who was our past assistant golf professional, who now moved on to be the head professional at Rivermore, won the championship flight. Dan Miller, who plays quite extensively at Brightondale, he won the A flight, and Justin Clark won the B flight. We also hosted Saturday's Kenosha County Ladies Open, and Amy Smith won that, and then Paul Lynch won our Junior Open, which was a four-day event in early July. The junior clinics are wrapping up this week. We have about 110 participants. We are going to have a parent-child tournament on August 7th from that event at 3 p.m. at Brightondale. And the PGA Junior League is wrapping up again. Brightondale is doing well for the fourth year in a row. I think that Strawberry Creek has two teams and actually won the league this year. But we do have some all-stars from Brightondale and Petrifying Springs that are going to go to the regional tournament. The Caddy and Leadership Academy of southeastern Wisconsin is going great. All the golfers and caddies have really responded positively. And we're going to have our wrap-up party on Monday the 15th. So if you want to take a caddy, you got to do it in the next 2 weeks. These young individuals are really getting some great leadership training. We have people from the Western Golf Association. We had a colonel from the military come and give training. We have Pat Donahue, that was the vice president of craft, that is doing leadership training. So I mean, you know, they have to do community service. So really, their training in this program is very extensive, and they're doing a very good job. The conditions of the golf course, I've heard just rave reviews about Petrifying Springs. Brightondale also, one thing we did end up contacting a humidity and heat disease called Pythium at Brightondale, and it has affected us, and we have treated the fairways. It's very, very expensive chemical to treat this disease, and it kind of hurts the aesthetics. It doesn't really hurt the playing characteristics of the golf course, but it does hurt the aesthetics, and it comes when we have really high humidity and high temperatures at night. So this week is another week that we're going to have to struggle getting through, but hopefully we don't have any more outbreaks of that disease itself. And I'm real happy to say that we've hired Kim Lutkin. She's our new food and beverage manager at Petrifying Springs. She comes to us from Bigfoot Country Club over in Walworth, and she brings a lot of energy and enthusiasm. Very nice person, good knowledge of the industry. So very excited about having a new person heading up the food and beverage operations at Petrifying Springs. It's going to be great. And the projects we're working on, still working on the ash tree removal, especially at Petrifying Springs. Most of it is done at Brightondale, but we're still grinding stumps and digging out the grindings and putting dirt in the holes. I don't see a finish to this in the near future at Petrifying Springs. There's just so many stumps and such a small crew. We only have 8 people on our crew there. So it takes a while to get that done. And now we're considering bunkers for removal at Brightondale. We have 137 bunkers. We'd like to get down to about 90 bunkers. Bunkers are second most expensive feature on the golf course to maintain. And we worked with Todd Quintino, who's from Lohman Golf Design. He's our architectural company that we picked to do our master plan. And we've targeted some bunkers that we're going to try and remove yet this year, dig out the sand and either make mounds out of them or swales or depressions, grass depressions, and have playing features in their place that are mowable instead of having to have people rake them and maintain them all the time. So we're working at looking at removing some of those according to our master plan. So everything else in golf is very, very positive.
Anybody have any questions for Dan?
I have a question. In terms of food and beverage manager, what does this person do during the off season? How is that structured?
It's a seasonal position, so that they'll be laid off at the end of November and then rehired again in March.
Okay, that's part of the contract.
We're hoping that they come back in March. You know, that's some of the battle that we have been fighting for the last 4 years. We've lost our food and beverage manager over there, and we did have a little bit of stability. We had one for 3 years before that, but she moved on to a full-time position at another golf course. And that's something that we've been struggling with.
Thank you.
Anything else for Dan? So this is something we have discussed as a committee and we've talked about. And it is a big problem. It's a huge problem. Because we had to have the guy from Brightondale going out to pass, and we still have to hire 5 positions and you get out into the seat. That's the problem you run into with a seasonal thing. I've done it for 45 years. Struggled with seasonal work. And you'll get a crew that'll come back for 5 years, 7 years, 8 years, and then all of a sudden you start from scratch. I really think that, and I know I've discussed this before, we have to come up with some type of a solution for that. One of the ones that I've done prior in my own business is come up with something for this person to do that I guaranteed through another business, and that they kept the same pay. So basically, they weren't unemployed. They weren't on unemployment. But then they still came back to me. And I think we have to really look at something like that. I mean, for years we've done it in my industry with like the ski hills. We used to. With them, say we've got 7 guys, and they'd say, "Yeah, we'll take 7 guys." They knew if they worked hard for us at the ski hills back then, they were like gold, And then we weren't paying them on unemployment; ski hills was paying them, and we actually made up the difference for what they made, And back then, they weren't making much money, Say you pay somebody, what do we pay this person?
We hired her at $16 an hour.
$16 an hour, so. We go and we contact somebody and we say, and they say, well, no, we only pay 14. We say, well, we'll make up the difference. So there might be some breathtaking way that we can make this a good job for somebody, like a full-time job somehow. I think we need to, because you struggle with this now constantly.
Yeah.
And if you're struggling with it, then our customers are struggling with it. And then you got this other guy going back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, he's relieved that we hired this person, that's for sure.
I'm sure. I mean, I don't know if there's a way that we can do it being a governmental body, but there may be. Whether this person went and worked cooking at the jail, So, just a thought. I know you guys are good at figuring this out. Anything else for Dan? Jill?
Do you know what the cost savings is to remove the bunkers, and are you planning to eventually remove all 137?
No. We're hoping to get down to about 90, and as far as the cost savings goes, I guess it's just a redistribution of labor to make other aspects of the golf course even better. I'm not sure that we'll be able to you know, totally reduce our labor force because of it, because, you know, we need to have coverage, you know, for 7 days a week, because we're a 7 day a week operation. You know, I just know through the USGA and through our architectural firm that, you know, it is very expensive, because we do spend a great deal of time in the bunkers. We would like to redistribute those workers from raking traps to clearing brush, you know, keeping our brush down because of all the mosquito problems, and you know, you get airflow through the brush and you get such better turf conditions, and hopefully something like this Pythium, you know, wouldn't happen for us, because we're able to do a lot of brushing, you know, and getting rid of that. And we lost our work crew, you know, we're not able to continue with that. So, you know, that's going to have to be picked up by somebody. So I don't know if there's going to be a significant maintenance savings. It's just a redistribution to improve our facilities because of it.
Anything else for Dana?
No, thank you, Dana.
Thank you.
Move on to Mike, facilities.
I'll start with two letters that I have requesting reallocation of funds for two projects at KCDC. That'll go to the Finance Committee this week. So for this committee, it's informational. First project is asking for an additional $12,000 to the budget this year of 10 to put new flooring down in the guard stations. There's seven of them. We were going with carpet in the beginning. It was a Sheriff's Department request. They kind of have been redoing that facility on their own, going through and painting it and everything, and it's looking really good. So they asked if we could help them out and get this carpeting in. So we budgeted for it, got $10,000, and then we actually looked a little further to see if there would be a better flooring option, and we got some quotes for epoxy flooring that were in the $40,000 range, which, you know, that threw it right out the door. It was just not doable. It's a huge maintenance factor with doing it that way, so it's a big improvement for us. But we had a company come in and do the padded cells at the pretrial facility, and they specialize in coatings. So we asked them to take a look at it, and they came back at $22,000. So that, in my eyes, made it much more doable. So what we're doing here is asking for an additional $12,000 to do it what I feel is the right way, and it'll last much longer than carpet. So that's the first one. Second one is for replacing a loading dock system. The back of the building at KCDC has the first floor height is at about 4 feet high when you come to the back of the building. So they have what's called a dual dock, and that dock has different positions it can lock into for three different delivery heights. At the flooring height of 4 feet, it'll handle like a semi truck bringing in food for the kitchen. So the dock will stay at that height. When Dave, the cook in the kitchen, delivers his food to the safety building, it goes down to a cargo van height, so that dock system goes down to that height. Then later on at night, the inmates take out the garbage from the jail, which takes it down to the concrete floor height on the back of the building. So there's three different heights they need there. This dual dock system is original to the building. It's way beyond its expected life. We put $8,000 into it last year. We've got another repair because it's just broke now again. It costs $7,000. They want $40,000 to replace it with a new one. It's a very non-user-friendly type system. That's part of the problem with this. A company that wanted to put it in, we asked them for alternatives, and they came up with a very simple-to-use scissors lift system for $22,000. So, $24,500. So we're asking for funds to do that and get that fixed so they can start using it again. The funds for both projects will come from the leftover money from the roofing project for this building.
Yes, Supervisor
Basham. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. Mm-hmm. The scissors lift, is that something that is going to be sunk into the ground?
It has a cavity right now where the dual dock is, so that'll just come out and it'll fill that cavity.
And presumably sometime down the road when this thing needs to be replaced, something else can just
pop right in.
Yeah.
Yep.
The flooring. Mm-hmm. I'm certain it's going to last a heck of a lot longer than the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of boggled my mind that was even considered, but I get it for the cost factor. How much extra time are you anticipating? Is it a
You mean for life of it?
Yeah, is it like a 15 year, is it 20 year?
It's exponential compared to the carpeting.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a floor that can be mopped and just over and over and over. Epoxy lasts a long time.
That installs it doesn't give you any guidance?
They didn't give me any. We didn't ask because epoxy flooring is that good.
Yeah, okay.
It just was a no-brainer.
I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The final cost of the roof is how far below the $600,000 capital budget, just out of curiosity? Thought you might ask.
Ray and I talked about this Thursday, and I said, thank God for this roof.
Like the roofs.
Because we've funded three things so far from the savings for that.
Right. I was just curious.
Since you asked, I'll give you the first one.
All right.
Because we actually had one of these come through last month. The original budget for this roof, and we had the study done of all the roofs. Was it last year? We had IRS come in. They're a professional roofing engineering consulting firm. They looked at every roof in the county and gave us a plan for how old each roof was, how long it would last, whether it should be replaced, and if it didn't have to be replaced, what we have to do to maintain it. They came up with an estimate for this roof of $600,000. The total cost is going to be $373,000. And the reason it's low, I'm pretty sure we talked about this before, but we'll remind you, we started early before anybody else was out in the marketplace looking for people to do roofs, and we got a real good deal. We had 15 people respond, which is pretty unheard of when we do these kind of things. And then we also had a fairly large contingency. We didn't really know how much of the roof, the underlayment, the fiberglass that was underneath would have to be replaced. We didn't have to be replaced very much of it. So we got a great deal on this roof. So we're able to use some of these funds. Last month we bought put the letter through for floodplain property purchase. And then you see the two other ones here that Mike just talked about, the dock project and Aaron House flooring. So we still have $127,000 left over, which we'll plan on rolling next year, because when you look at the next budget, you're going to see that there's a roof for this part of the building in there next year. So we'll roll whatever's left over to help fund that. So it was a fortuitous. Not all of them are like that.
Anything else for Mike on that? Do you want to continue later, Gary or Bill?
I'm going to let Mike finish and ask a question.
Okay.
So that's it for the letters. Back into the projects, the ongoing projects that we're working on. There were two on the list. One at the PSB to upgrade security and evidence. There's nothing new to report on that. At the pretrial facility, we're doing a project to replace the sealants for the precast. It's in pre-bid status. We've actually had a meeting where we took contractors around and showed them so they could put a package together. Those bids are due on August 10th. And then the language in the bid spec is to have the project completed by September 30th before it gets too cold. We had eight different contractors show up for that. Seven or eight. And then on to the energy team project status list. You guys have that. The additions to that are in red. So there's one addition there to the incomplete top portion of that list. We had a level two assessment done at KCJC a while ago, I think in April. And we just got the recommendations from the Focus on Energy guys about a week and a half ago on what to do for projects in that building. And there's two in question that we have to talk about yet, if we're going to put them on the list or not, so that's still in discussions. But the one you see in there in red is one we are going to go forward with, and that's to replace all the little hot water heaters for all the bathrooms throughout all the different locations in the building with instant hot water heaters. Right now we got 5 and 10 gallon electric hot water heaters in 11 locations. And they serve like a set of bathrooms here, a set of bathrooms there, and they're a terribly high maintenance issue. At least twice a year, two of them are rusting out, and we always find out the hard way. They're up in the ceilings above the bathrooms, and ceiling collapses and everything's a mess. So just going to a system like this that isn't going to do that is going to be huge. But if you look at what the project cost is, it's $3,300, and you know the annual savings is darn near that. So it's a 1.2-year payback, so it's a no-brainer. So we'll get started on that soon. Outside of that, we did a level two assessment on the administration building, I think Wednesday last week. So we had the engineer from Focus on Energy walking around looking at all our systems. And KCAB's not a super complicated building like the safety building where you're going to find all kinds of projects to pick from to do this kind of thing. If you remember KCAB, all the systems have been replaced lately. Frank had the project where we replaced the rooftop, we replaced the cooling tower out in the back. The boilers were replaced with a project last year through a project I did along with the hot water heater. So that was one of the good projects on here. So really there isn't a whole lot left at that building except lighting, things like that. So his recommendations were kind of geared towards that, and at the end of the walkthrough he said, well, there isn't probably a lot I'm going to find to recommend, and we'll see, but it doesn't look like there's going to be a lot. And then we have three buildings left to do level two assessments, and they're even more minor buildings than KCAB. So there isn't going to be a lot to find, and we're debating now whether or not we're going to do level two assessments on that or switch to a much simpler, quicker walkthrough with a level one assessment, which it makes a lot of sense to do that. So that's probably what's going to happen here. And what that all means is this is kind of winding down after a couple of years of hard work, and we've kind of got most of the major things out of the way.
Okay, Bill.
Not specific to what you're talking about, Mike, but either through the chair to Jim or Ray, just procedurally, I see that some of these things, I should know the answer to this, but I don't. Some of these actually require our action or at least our input, and these particular ones do not when we're talking about the repurposing. What's the criterion? Why do some do and why do some don't?
If two projects are budgeted in the same appropriation, and that's a governmental accounting term, means this, the same budget. I gave you an example, the capital expenditure projects in the highway department, we've got one appropriation for equipment, we've got another appropriation for the highway paving. In the facilities department, we've got an appropriation for equipment, we've got appropriation level for repairs to machinery and equipment, and then there's appropriation for the buildings. So if these two projects that you want to move money from one to the other are within the same appropriation level, then it's just a letter to finance. There's no budget mod needed because they're already within the same budget. But we are obliged to tell you guys and get your approval too before we do any of this. So all these projects have been all within the same facilities appropriation level. If one was in the job center and one was in say the safety building, those are two different appropriation levels, but these are all within the same. That answer.
So if I understand you correctly, you're saying for us this evening this is informational, and it will be the same protocol then for finance, this information as well? They have to act upon it.
They have to approve it.
They do have to approve it.
Yeah.
As in voting on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
They will vote on it.
That's my question. Thank you.
And just to play out a little bit, so whereas, like Jim said, if they're in two different appropriation units and we need to make that kind of transfer, then it needs formal approval here,
right,
and formal approval at the Finance Committee, and I think those two.
It needs a resolution and a budget mod.
And it does ultimately go to the full board then, right, Jim?
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Good, thank you for the clarification.
Anything else for Mike? If that will move on to projects, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fire alarm systems replacement project, again, for the courthouse, which is an entire system, the panel, all of the devices, everything, wiring. The PO got awarded to Simplex between the engineering they have to do, between the state approvals, and the contractor looking at starting it in September for that project. Also, now that we've got that one kicked off and rolling, we want to start looking at replacing some of the panels that will be coming up, becoming obsolete. In other words, it's going to be tough to get the parts for these panels. So we want to stay ahead of that game, so we're looking at replacing two panels still this year for the fire alarm systems in certain buildings.
Okay.
time. The generator there was the original to the building from 1980, 250 kilowatt. We're, with all the new demands and needs, we're putting in a 600 kilowatt. We have the bids were all released, bid specs were all released last month. We have the pre-bid walkthrough tomorrow morning. Called up some contractors and actually got some more feedback, so we're hoping for a good turnout. The bids will be due back on August 22nd. No questions on that. I'll move on to the last item here, the PSB addition second floor project. All the conceptual drawings are done. We got conceptual budgets compiled. And we've been meeting with all the stakeholders. We've got some more stakeholders this week we're going to meet with, just crossing the T's, dotting the I's for the layouts and everything. So at this point, it's really within the budget process.
Yeah, I wanted to piggyback on that too, just to give, so we're going to meet with the county executive next week and the mayor, because there's joint services involved in this as well, to go over these concept drawings and estimated budget costs for everything. And just want to make the committee aware that the base plan is to build up that second floor of the PSB and move the ME from a split situation right now at the Job Center and at Kenosha Hospital, move them into the building. We're also going to look at seriously considering repurposing one of the properties that we acquired on 11th, I take that back, is that 11th?
11th and 57th.
11th and 57th. The old, what's called the Wisconsin Millwork, or we call it the Badger Millwork building. We had a structural analysis of that building done, and we're looking at possibly moving the fleet maintenance function out of the safety building to create the space necessary for the ME to come back into that building, or not come back, come not back into it, come to that building. It's never been in that building. So that's one of the things we wanted to give the committee a heads up. We're going to formally present that to the executive next week, and then that'll be part of the budget process this year. We'll have a proposal for that entire kind of build out and kind of the domino effect of everything. There's quite a few moving pieces.
This is one of the buildings that we purchased last fall when we were talking about the downtown campus having the land, but this building has come up to be better than expected and could work very well for this fleet maintenance because of some of the spaces that it had. And that is specifically one of the things is the maintenance now done on our squad cars and everything else. These guys are crawling around their hands and knees in this little trough to do that, and this building would give us the ability to have actually elevated lifts. And this is the space that it has, and it's the inspections that have been done on the building have shown to be in remarkable shape to possibly do something to enhance our downtown campus, and that there was a possibility of that building being a teardown by us. We wanted the land. We wanted to have the ability to be able to keep things going in that downtown area. But this one could work out reasonably on top of it. It looks like a really good fit.
There's still quite a few ifs in the equation, but at this point it looks pretty solid. And one of the things the chairman alluded to is that if you've ever been in the fleet maintenance, it's on the west end of the public safety building. It was constructed, their second floor above that is jail. So they can only lift regular squads up about maybe 4 feet off the ground. And that's as good as it gets because there's infrastructure to service the jail up above. But now that everybody's moving to SUVs, I believe roughly half of the sheriff's fleet is SUVs. And the city took delivery, I want to say 2-3 weeks ago, of their first SUVs. As they move towards that type of a police vehicle, well, when you raise those up, they're about 2.5 feet off the ground. And so these guys, I think a requirement for joint services mechanics is that they all are over 6'4". So they're, I'm joking, but they are. They're all really big guys. And they're all working underneath this, these vehicles in that kind of a situation. So there's a lot of pieces, but I just wanted to give some insight into that.
Steve?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'm struggling to picture this building, and I'm in that area all the time. I know the Zinane sheet metal building on 56. Is this directly behind that?
Kitty corner. Kind of directly behind it. It's just a little to the southeast. Yeah.
Behind the daycare.
Yeah,
kind of
behind the daycare.
And how big is the building?
It's about 9,500 square feet.
And it's slab on grade?
Slab on grade. It's a two-story building, and then there's an office addition to it. So it's one of those things when you first look at it, you go, okay, let's tear that thing down. But then when you start to look at everything kind of in the whole hopper, you say, well, maybe it makes sense to repurpose this thing. So that's kind of where we're at.
Interesting. Thank you.
So now, Steve, look, clear it out.
Yeah.
You can give us some advice.
sounds like you got a good plan, so.
When we take a look at the build out for the second floor, what are we looking at in terms of square feet approximately? How big a thing is this?
I think those are 25. I think it's 22,000 per floor. I think that's 22,000 per floor.
Yeah.
Because I think it was 60,000 for that addition. Might be 25,000. I think it was 75,000. 25,000 per floor.
Yeah.
Well, we can verify it, but it's in that range.
So you're in the 20,000 neighborhood.
Yep.
Received a request from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Administration to present this resolution to the county board for their consideration. The Federal Highway Administration requires the county board to approve the functional classification system of rural highways in the county. And what this resolution would do would be to have the county board delegate that responsibility to the highway commissioner. I'll just briefly explain what the functional classification system is. And this just pertains to rural highways. It does not pertain to highways that are in the urbanized area of Kenosha or the urbanized area of the Round Lake Beach area. And I did include a map in your packets, and anything in orange or yellow, those highways are on the rural system. The gray areas are the city of Kenosha and the Round Lake Beach area. All of our highways are functionally classified into categories arterials, collectors, or local roads. And the Federal Highway Administration and the Wisconsin Department of Transportation have a manual that you follow, 49 pages of how you functionally classify highways. And just to give you a little bit of idea of how that's done, I'm not going to explain it all, but it's based on population centers in the county, different types of land use in the county. Land use can be things like cities, villages, population concentrations, commercial or industrial facilities, recreational facilities, institutional facilities, those kind of things are taken into consideration to determine how important these highways are, is basically what they're doing. Arterial being the highest use, collector, middle use, and local road the lowest use. And the primary reason why this is important to us is, and why the federal and state government are involved, is that only a collector and an arterial highway is eligible for funding in any program that the state or federal government provide to us. So, so that's really the biggest impact of this functional classification. It's modified once every 10 years when the census update occurs, because this is so orientated to population centers in the county. Because there's just so many criteria, I think the both the state and the feds determined it would just be more appropriate, more efficient for them to work with one person in the county instead of an entire county board. So this isn't unique to Kenosha County, it's every county in the state. With your approval, that functional classification changes or modifications and ultimate approval would be delegated to the highway commissioner.
So with that, can I get a motion to approve that ability to be delegated to our highway commissioner? Question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just because I'm new and somewhat clueless, who is our highway commissioner?
Gary.
Okay. Thank you for clarification.
Yeah.
Then I'll make that motion to approve.
Second. Second by Supervisor Grady. Any discussion or questions?
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Who classifies it now? Is it just the federal government or?
It's the Wisconsin Department of Transportation does the actual determination, and then it's approved by the Federal Highway Administration.
Okay.
Now it'll be whoever is our highway commissioner.
Right.
You said that they were doing it every 10 years. It seems. Why are they doing it now?
This is based on the 2010 census. I guess it takes them 6 years.
It's almost ready for another one here.
Yeah, that they're just 6 years behind. It, yeah.
Okay.
We have no other explanation.
We've never done this at Idaho.
No, this is not. This is something new, and I made sure they. I was questioning it myself, so I did make sure that the state DOT provided me with the federal regulations that, yes, in fact, this is a requirement of the federal government.
So we have a motion by Supervisor Bostrom, second by Supervisor Grady.
Can I just ask
Supervisor
a question?
Gilmore?
Can you just explain what the proposed functional classification changes are? Is there a list of those, or?
There is a list of proposed changes, and I don't have them with me, but they're all identified on the map. On the county trunk system, there is changes, very few. There's changes actually that increase the functional classification to arterial highways on Highway K and Highway H. There's a section of Highway L that's increased, and a small section of E and KR. So I've not gone through this process with them yet because they're waiting for, obviously, for the approval of me having the authority to do that by the county board. So we've not, the changes haven't occurred yet, but those are the proposed changes, and all the proposed changes increase the classification to arterial, which for us is actually to our benefit, because those roads would be eligible for funding if we found some sort of improvement project that was necessary.
It was just difficult to look, to read the map, so I thought maybe if you could explanify what was on there, that would be great. But
I guess the key is that the changes haven't occurred yet because they're waiting for me to have the authority to do that.
Anything else? If not, all those in favor, youth and government?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Yeah, this is approved. We have a master we have to sign for this evening. And then here you are, your visitor report.
Yeah, Clement's going to give you an update on projects that are ongoing this year.
Yeah, I just selected you projects that are ongoing or that are impacting traffic. I just give you an update. Though this one is not affecting traffic, but it's just something to report about the Kenosha Highway Division fuel tank. We received bids, but the bids were, the list was above 40% what we had for our construction budget, so the bids were rejected. And we think the issue was the fact that the timing was not the best. Most of the specialized contractors that you'd normally construct fuel tanks were all very busy and engaged, and so we had only two bids for two contractors, and of course they were a little bit higher than expected. However, we'll be re-letting it again so late this year or early next year, which we think will be the best time to get the good prices for the fuel tank. So the bids were all rejected. The next project I would like to report on will be the County Trunk Highway S and County Trunk Highway N intersection. As a matter of fact, we had our pre-construction meeting this morning, and the project is scheduled to tentatively, weather permitting, to start on the 22nd of August. The contractor, the main contractor, is Lolan Construction. And the bid, of course, we reported the bid last meeting. It came out good. The next project is County C from State Trunk Highway 83 to County Trunk Highway JF, and JF from C 1,500 feet south of C. We're doing the resurfacing and a little bit of expansion. We got bids, and Payne and Dolan is the contractor with the lowest bid. And construction, again, is scheduled to tentatively start on the 22nd of August. The next project is County Trunk Highway C Covert Replacement. This is an emergency project. I think we reported it last time, but we, at this point, the only thing that is holding us back, we're still waiting for DNR permit. Other than that, the contractor is ready to go, and we are tentatively scheduling to start at August 22nd again. This one will require complete closure of County Trunk Highway C at the location where the project will be taking place, that is the Camp Lake Dam. And then we'll reroute traffic through B, AH, and SA, and then bring them back down to 83 to C. Then the next project I'm going to report is not really a county project, but we are monitoring the project just to make sure that we get ahead of it, just in case there's a serious impact to traffic to the population in Kenosha County. And this is the project on State Trunk Highway 165. At the moment, we are just monitoring. No major event has taken place. They're just doing grading work. piling started today, so you'll be experiencing, those who live by the area will be experiencing some noise during the day when they're driving down the piles, or maybe a little bit of vibration. In about 2 weeks' time, they'll be walking on the new road, and you also expect some delays because of traffic control. And that's all I have for today.
Cleveland, I have to say I'm very impressed that less than a year here that you've all the detour at sea. You actually do A, H, B, and all that. But he sent them here with a map that he had to study.
It's funny you would say that because we had a meeting about that today and we came together. He brought a map, I brought a map, we had the exact same detour.
I was going to say, boy, if you know SAAH, I have customers, you know, a guy called me last week, he's an old friend of a friend, said, I'm on Montgomery Lake. I said, yeah, I'm buying sales. I said, well, you got to take AAH. I said, I know that, you know, people don't realize, but if they haven't been here that long, they realize, they think we don't know. But yeah, SAAH and all that, I'm very impressed. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Through the chair, what is the duration of that duration of that construction project on County C? How long will that extend, do we expect, with usual weather conditions?
Well, based on, you're talking about the culvert replacement, we are anticipating, we say between 5 to 7 days, but we are shooting for 3 days. The reason being that, as you said, the weather might not be favorable, but we are shooting for 3 days if we can make it, but 5 to 7 days will be max.
And that would be the time the traffic would be diverted or rerouted?
Correct.
During that time. Then after that, it would be normal traffic?
Correct. And we're specifically shooting for this time. We hope we get it. We're shooting for this time because then the county fair will be over.
Right.
School, it will just be the week before school starts. Right. So we want to get in, get out before school starts.
Good, thank you. Come
on. Yeah.
There's a bus company about 2 blocks away.
That's right.
Okay. Anything else for Clement? Not Gary Clement, thank you very much. Gary, you're all done, right?
All done.
Okay. Matthew Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First thing I have in front of you is a Prairie Restoration Grant Award. And just, I guess, a little bit of history on the Prairie Grant. This is located 20 and a half acres just to the north on the Kenosha County Center campus. So for those who have visited the center, Gary and his highway crew put in a walking path around the agricultural field right to the north of the center that's actually owned by Kenosha County. So with that, I think we had an internal meeting one time and we thought, wow, it'd be kind of a cool idea to restore this ag field into a prairie. So as we started to develop these what-if scenarios, I worked with a Carthage intern to develop a feasibility study to actually convert this over, including soil tests, species lists, and all that good stuff. So it was a pretty extensive report that we were able to complete. And when we were done with that report through this intern, we submitted it to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they were 100% on board. When our intern completed that report, it would have cost the county about $35,000 to do that if we just did it internally, because of the extent of the acreage with that seed mix. But working with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they knocked it down to approximately $6,700 that they could help us with that grant. Going to contract out for the seed mix and for them to basically be a co-sponsor of that project and work with Kenosha County to convert that agriculture field into a prairie. So that's what you have in front of you is basically approval to accept the funds in order to move forward with this prairie restoration.
Any questions for Matt? This thing, you can't see it from here, you can see it from the other office. You've seen the walking trail. Yeah. And where the gardens are on the helicopter pad and all that. Yes.
So does this involve the area to the north where that big hill was knocked down?
the hill's not going to be knocked down per se.
Well,
it already has been knocked down.
Yeah, Bill's referring to a, you wouldn't be familiar with the hill, Mount George, as it's widely referred to. There was a big, yes, so it is. That area that's part of that's ag, it's got corn on it right now.
Okay.
And there's a strip that's still alfalfa that probably will eventually, but for right now it would be basically what all is in corn.
Correct.
Would go back to a natural prairie and pollinator kind of a program. And what's happening is folks that live in this area know that that's becoming kind of a real community asset where folks are out there pretty much every day from the community that are using that walking path. And so this kind of is another extension of that. It's totally possible someday. I mean, the county originally bought this property so that if we needed to build something at some point, that's what it's there for and that's what it would be used for. But who knows when that will be. There's no plans for anything right now. This would be, makes it more of a community asset kind of heading in this direction than what it's currently used for.
So going forward, once this would be completed as a prairie restoration, is it correct in the assumption that it would be really no maintenance on it because it just basically takes care of itself? Is that the...
I would say minimal, very minimal. You have to mow it, especially in the first 3 years once this is developed. You have to mow it down to a certain threshold, and then after 3 years, 3 to 5 years, you do control burns in order to help with the germination, pollinators, and the regrowing of the tall grasses and the flowers that are in there. So very minimal maintenance that's involved, but a few.
Thank you.
If we've met, excuse me, if we've accepted money from the Federal Wildlife to do this, and then we do decide that we need to build another highway garage over there, are we constrained in any way?
What it is how it's been explained to me, is it's a handshake deal with the county and the Fish and Wildlife Service that they would like you to utilize it for that intent for 10 years. But it's nothing in writing, there's no formal agreement. But that's just the wishes of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
So we're not held, like when we get a green grant for a park, where that's it?
Correct, it's not to that extent.
Great. So we're ready to go move.
Are we currently in a contract with a farmer that has the corn that's out there right now?
Yes, it's a one-year contract. It'll be done at the end of 2016.
So he'll be able to harvest the corn that's there?
Correct. We will do no harm to his properties over this year. And I've already had several conversations with that farmer.
Anything else? If not, is there a motion to approve this resolution?
So moved.
Supervisor Grady?
Second.
Supervisor Franco, second. Any further discussion? You the governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
It carries, so we have the signage coming around to all. Amen.
All right, for the division report, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the initial comments on our summer youth employment program, and that's one of the first things that I have as far as ash tree removal and kind of getting past phase one, but they've been fantastic. I've witnessed the program even from last year when I first was hired to this year, and logistically how more efficient that group has become. It's been outstanding working alongside those groups of kids, and it really made a true impact on our parks and division. So it was a really good collaborative effort. We're not done with that group yet, but it's been huge as far as their resources and their contribution to clean up from the ash tree program. We actually finished with all stumps throughout Fox River Park and Petrifying Springs Park. So we're moving on to kind of the nitty gritty areas, but as far as the cleanup, we're well on our way to actually the reforestation efforts, hopefully by next year. As far as Kemper Coastal Management Plan, we're almost there as far as receiving a draft for the long-term and short-term solutions. Ray and I talked to Baird a few weeks ago, just to tweak a few things here and there. So hopefully within, I would say, 3 weeks or so, we should have a final copy of the coastal management plan for the Kemper Center shoreline. As far as KD Park Phase 1 construction goes, KD Park is now officially closed as of today for the start of that construction efforts. So they already started to bring in a lot of their equipment and mobilize in the area. So KD Park will be closed until that project's complete in fall of this year. Fox River Park, thanks to Gary and Clement's crew for finishing up and finalizing the paving of the parkway, parking lots, and service shop area. So that is completely done for the paving. We just have our parks crews working on the shoulders. Since we did an overlay, we have to regrade out some of the shoulders, bring in a lot of topsoil, and then stripe the parking lots, and that project will be complete. And as I mentioned before, with the Summer Youth Employment Program, doing a fantastic job clearing brush, filling stumps, playground work, trail maintenance. So we have it for probably another, I'd say, 2 to 3 weeks left for the season. And then upcoming events, we were able to partner with CABA, and their Young Professional Network is considered Y-Link. And we are hosting, in conjunction with them, a movie night over at Petrifying Springs on August 10th. So that's something new for the area, and we're hoping to really engage with young professionals and bring something unique into the park. So we're actually going to be showing the new Star Wars film for this time around. And then other future events, we have one more ELCA movie night on the 25th. Oktoberfest, if you guys haven't been to Oktoberfest ever, I highly recommend it. It's for all a good cause, too, because it's run by a not-for-profit partner, Oktoberfest, Inc., that raises proceeds for a future development of a band shell over there. So 100% of the profits go back to the park. So that's happening on September 10th. We have the Fall Fun Fest over at Pringle Nature Center on September 17th. And then October 10th, or October 1st, is the Fall Wheel Ride. So I attached a few cool pictures. Some of the pictures is kind of unique. We had Fox 6 do an interview for their morning show over at Petrifying Springs Park for historical fencing at Pets. So it's not as threatening as it looks in the pictures, but it's a really cool, unique group that we worked with Corp Council to make sure we dotted the I's on that one, but it offers something unique for this not-for-profit group to do all their practices and events within the park. So I figured we'd share a couple of those unique photos with you.
The man, I thought when I first heard about historical fencing, I thought they were doing a story on like split rail.
Me too.
Close.
Seriously, because I had to mass with historical fencing one time.
Oh.
And bid some old split rail up along Milwaukee River. So I saw that historical fencing, I said, my God, they're still doing that. And I find out it's youth saber.
Yeah, broadswords with right. Kind of tip on them too much.
Anybody have any questions for Ben?
Can you explain the Fall Wheel Ride?
On October 1st?
Yeah,
that's in conjunction with the county executive. He hosts a Fall Wheel Ride where basically you have two stops that basically start at Bowes Elementary School is one of the stops, and one of the city of Kenosha parks on the eastern side is another starting point for this bike ride. So it basically follows a route, and we mark the route for family-friendly basically bike ride in the morning, and it ends at Petrifying Springs shelter number one, and we give out the apple cider, food, beverages, and all that good stuff. So it just kind of highlights biking and all of our bike lanes, multi-use paths throughout the Kenosha County area.
Anything else from that? If not, thank you, Matt. Move on to Madam Chair.
So the first thing up to bat is the resolution for formal appointment of Matt to the position of Director of County Parks. The way the process works is Jim, the county executive, had appointed him interim director. It was September 7th. July 7th, and July 12th, I see. And we now need to take, and county executive made the referral to the county board. The county board refers it back to Public Works Committee, and Public Works Committee, it'll go directly back to the board, assuming there is a positive response, which I would expect there would be, because I think Matt's doing a really solid job. He's doing a terrific job the year he spent with John. They do what I refer to the Vulcan mind meld, for those of you that were Star Trek geeks. And I think that he's taken all of John's knowledge
maybe not all of it because there was 40 years of it, but a good chunk of it. And he's already mixing it in with his maybe more formal, kind of strategic kind of approach to things. And it looks like it's going to be a really good situation for our Parks Department going forward. I think we really have a solid guy that has the personality, the selflessness that John had, the character that John had, the integrity that John had, and the judgment that John had. So I think we have a really solid guy, and Matt, I would urge unanimous approval of the resolution.
Yeah, I'll sort of bet on how this was done. I think it was fantastic, and it was the same way the county executive worked on retirements with Mr. Sisma, having Clement here, and we'll be doing this again with Clement. Matt spent a year with John, and you know, John spent a lot of years with other people too before John took charge. And this is a whole new world that we're in, and we've stepped up so fast here in the last 10 years with things we never did. And now I've seen in the year that Matt's been here, we've about done the same thing in the year that we did in those 10 with some new thinking. You know, Matt was vetted heavily by us, and he had the experience with Milwaukee County. He's got the formal training and just some neat new ideas. But as Ray said, learned here from a man that was here for 42 years. And Matt's not afraid to get dirty. He's not afraid to be out there on a Sunday, because that's what the director does or the boss does on anything. So I'm very pleased that we were fortunate that this really worked well for everyone. I would urge everyone to approve also. Excuse me.
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
Supervisor Gray, seconded by Supervisor Bostrom. Any discussion? If not, you the governance?
Aye.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
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 Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So there'll be a signing page going around, and does this have to go, this goes back to the board?
Back to the board, yep.
I would have gone tomorrow, but we don't have a meeting tomorrow.
Yeah. I will bring the committee up to speed on the Brookside project. Quite a bit has taken place. I again urge folks, if you happen to be on the north side, to drive by. And as the building comes out of the ground, it's maybe not daily, but I would say if you went by the beginning of the week and the end of the week, you'd be able to see significant progress. Soils issues are totally complete. We got the all clear signal not last week, but the week before. That said, the bad news is the total between compromised soils, which I explained a few meetings back, as well as the contaminated soils, we ate roughly $250,000 of our contingency. So I'm not raising the red flag, but I've got the yellow flag on. So we've really got to monitor things going forward with everything that goes on in the project. And we're going to continue to look at ways to save what we call value engineering as the project progresses too. But the bottom line is we're out of the soils, and again, the majority of those contaminated soils were in what is the basement area now, so we would have had to take them out anyways had we not done the basement. It's just that we would have filled them back in with clean fill. So the basement is still looking like a very, very good decision. We're roughly 3 to 4 weeks behind the original schedule as a result of dealing with the contaminated soils. You can see that the roof trusses on what we're calling the east wing of the CBRF, the community-based residential facility. The east wing is the one that's the closest to Washington. Those roof trusses are completely installed. The west wing of that CBRF, those are just about done. Those will be done this week. And then there's a common hall that links those two wings. Those trusses are being installed this week as well. Then when you move north to the rehab, the two wings there, the south wing of that rehab unit, all the mechanical, electrical, plumbing is being installed under what's going to be the slab. The slab's going to be poured next week over that, and that'll be ready for walls to go up on the south wing of that unit. The north wing, where the soils were, where the basement exists, they're pouring actually the walls right now. So if you get a chance, if you're interested at all, drive around the back of Brookside. You can still go around the back way, you'll see that being done. It's pretty cool. So that's where that is. The month of August, you'll see the walls go up on the south unit of the rehab. You'll see the precast planks before the end of the month go over the basement to create the first floor, the floor for the first floor on the north wing of the CBRF, or I should say of the rehab unit. So it'll be quite a bit. By the end of the month, if the weather stays good like it's been, the building will really start to take shape. The other thing that's interesting is every time the architects come out, so we have weekly progress meetings with the contractor, and the architect shows up every other week at this stage. Once we get into the innards of the building, they'll be there every week, but right now it's every other week. Every time they come out, they are blown away at the level of quality that Camozzi is doing on this job. This is the first project I've worked with Camozzi on, but when these guys come down, and literally this past week, the senior architect, he was blown away because the day before he was at a job site for an apartment building in Milwaukee, and once you pour your foundation walls and then you construct your walls on that, you can eyeball right, you know, down the length of that wall, and you can get a pretty good idea of how well the concrete was poured. Well, you can look down any of the walls out there, and it's probably plus or minus an eighth inch. If you look down, it's pretty much straight as an arrow. If you have a 6-inch gap or an 8-inch gap that we're going to build in the brick veneer on the front of this building, it's right there, and it's consistent all the way down. The architect said that just the day before, he was at a building, big apartment building that they're putting up in Milwaukee area, and it was 2 inches here and 4 inches 10 feet later and 2 inches and then 10 inches, and he said it was literally like this. And they're used to that kind, seeing that kind of quality in construction now. So they are blown, and every time they come down, they are, it's literally their faces light up because it's like, we have not seen anything like this. So that makes me feel really good when those guys are impressed with what's taking place. I think we're going to end up with a really good project when it's all done. So that's pretty much it for the Brookside project. Other stuff we've got going on, just general department stuff. We're continuing our leadership development training in the highway division. Clement's heading that up with our management team. It is a long process to, let's say, alter the culture and kind of bring folks up to a more enlightened approach to management so that we get the most done with the folks that we've got to work with. That's the ultimate goal. And in addition, we started our formal lean training now. We've got a consultant that's helping us with lean training, facilities group, Mike's folks, and Brookside. Actually, those two are we've got kind of teams that are assembled, and they're going through formal lean training. Most of the committee, probably via their work, I'm assuming, is familiar with the concept of lean manufacturing. It started in manufacturing 30 years ago, but now it's being commonly employed in pretty much every industry, and government's no exception. So I worked with it extensively when I worked in manufacturing. Literally the first time was 1985, but seeing it being used here, and it's just, we're going to get a lot of our processes defined and better defined so that we can get our work done better and ultimately it results in lower costs, better services, better customer satisfaction. It's kind of the whole nine yards. So we just started that at had our first meeting last Friday, actually, at Brookside. So that's pretty much a summary of what's going on, other than what everybody else talked about.
Any questions for Ray? Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. One, you haven't raised the red flag. It's a yellow flag. Is there an orange in between yellow and red?
There could be.
I just want to make sure at what point we really need to be on guard.
We will keep you informed.
Okay.
I promise you that. Mr. Kupfer sits in on the meetings, and he and I pretty much, a lot of the technical stuff I know he may bore him, but when it comes to talking about numbers, he keeps track of everything, so we're monitoring the situation closely.
Good. Can you refresh my memory, how many beds exactly are we going to be adding?
So we're going to end up with, right now there's 154 SNF, skilled nursing beds there. What we're going to end up with is 106 skilled nursing beds, 48 rehab beds, and 24 community-based residential facility beds, for a total of 178. So the net effect is we add 24 relative to the one current 154, but there's a different mix.
Sure.
Different
demographic. And the overall project cost is?
$20 million. Fully funded with Brookside revenues.
Got it.
No levy. Thank you.
Go. Is it lean manufacturing, L-E-A-N?
Yeah, lean like.
Keeping it light.
So that is the common perception is that it's just, we run really, you know, if you ask a lot of people, how does your company run? Well, it runs really lean. Well, no, lean is a very specific set of principles and tools that allow you to kind of, in a very detailed way, analyze what it is you do for a given process. Whether that's at Brookside, they're going to look at their admissions process. It touches every piece of the organization. If they don't communicate when a new person's coming on board that this person has a specific need in that room, then there's always a last-minute scramble, possibly by housekeeping, possibly by dietary, possibly by maintenance, to get, so if you can really get a handle on that process and make sure you dial out all the waste that's involved in that and only end up with a really value-added, every task that takes place is value-added, that's kind of what it is. It unbundles all that stuff and then rebuilds it in a very
efficiency.
Yes, efficiency.
Anything else for Rick? If not, thank you all very much for being here. Unless we're a motion to adjourn.
So moved.